Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to trace the philosophical path of Hermann Du Jouwerd. It's quite a journey.
It really is. We're looking specifically at how his thinking evolved, especially concerning God's role and, you know, the basis of knowledge itself. The sources we have really map this out.
Yeah, they do. So, starting point, around his inaugural address, Vrije Universiteit, 1926, what was the picture then?
Well, initially, it was this blend, drawing heavily on Kuiper. Think God's overarching plan, his providence, combined with his sovereignty over all of creation.
Okay, so everything fits together under God's authority, the different spheres of life, like law, art.
Exactly. Divine creation as the foundation, and these spheres are modalities working coherently under God. He even mentioned the Logos having an ordering role within that coherence around 1928.
Right. And back in 23, in that Calvinism and Natural Law piece, he called divine sovereignty the root of vitality. And the Logos, at first, he sort of equated that with the logical sphere, didn't he?
Pretty much, yeah. The logical modality seemed key to that initial ordering idea, a very, let's say, unified vision early on.
But then things started to shift. The sources really flagged the period around 1930 as significant.
Definitely. And a major part of that shift centers on that very concept of logos. It goes from being this foundational, almost all-encompassing principle to just one sphere or modality among many others. Marcel Verberg points out that the later work kind of drops that earlier twofold idea, the modal order and God's active providence working together so explicitly.
Interesting. And there's also a move away from an organic way of thinking.
Yeah, that organic analogy came largely from Kuiper.
Yeah.
Du Jouwerd starts moving towards what you might call a semantic analogy.
Mm.
Influences like Husserl, maybe even Heidegger, start showing up here.
Semantic, so meaning becomes central, like understanding through language.
Exactly. It seems he saw this linguistic turn, if you like, as an alternative to historicism, the idea that truth just changes with time and, well, relativism generally. You can even see him playing with the term meaning in various ways, in a 1928 article about legal causality. It's a subtle shift, but it's happening.
So what does this mean for the role of God's providence, his active guidance? Does that fade?
It seems to become less direct, perhaps. Less of the moment-by-moment guidance emphasis from the early days. It shifts more towards being a kind of religious ground structure.
And the creation-fall-redemption idea takes center stage, focused on the heart's direction.
Precisely. Providence doesn't vanish, but it arguably becomes more structural, almost like the framework for the opening process of creation, rather than the constant guiding hand emphasized earlier. The focus shifts to the direction of the heart.
Gotcha. So what pushed him this way? What were the catalysts?
The sources highlight two big ones. First, his intense study of Heidegger's Being and Time. That book landed in 1927.
Right, a huge work. How did that interact with Du Jouwerd's thought?
Well, Heidegger's all about being in the world, Dasein, self-determination in a way. Du Jouwerd fundamentally disagreed. He argued quite strongly that only God has being in the ultimate sense.
Man in the world.
The world has meaning, derived entirely from its dependence on God, the origin, the creator. So for Du Jouwerd, true authenticity isn't found in just dealing with our thrownness in time, like Heidegger might suggest.
Yeah.
It's found in recognizing our dependence on the origin, which transcends that temporality. A direct counterargument, really.
Makes sense. A real theological response to an existential philosophy. And the second catalyst.
The political climate. The rise of fascism, National Socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Du Jouwerd was deeply concerned about historicism, this idea that history itself creates values.
He saw a link there.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
He worried that this organic conception of society, often tied to historicist thinking, could pave the way for these totalitarian movements that elevated the state or the nation based on historical destiny.
Mm.
So reacting against history being its own justification pushed him to find something more stable, a viewpoint outside of time.
Which leads us to the Archimedean point. I remember seeing that mentioned.
Exactly. He brings it up as early as 1928. You know the analogy, give me a place to stand and I'll move the earth. He needed a fixed point outside the flow of the modalities.
And that point was?
For Du Jouwerd, it became this idea of the totality of meaning, which finds its coherence and its very possibility in its dependence on God's being. By 1931, this totality idea is really central.
A supertemporal root.
Yes, a supertemporal creaturely root that provides a view of totality. Some scholars see potential links here to German idealism, maybe Wundt, or even holist ideas in the philosophy of science at the time, like Driesch.
So this quest for a fixed point, this totality idea, it reshaped his whole system.
It did. It led towards a more let's say, hierarchical understanding of reality and knowledge. There's even a brief flirtation with the idea of an avum, a kind of intermediate temporal state.
And the role of providence.
Well, that earlier emphasis on God's active providential plan gets somewhat eclipsed by this focus on a universal ordering structure. He later calls it cosmic time.
Cosmic time? But not like clock time.
No, no. Much more about the structural ordering of the modalities, their duration and coherence. And importantly, the place where this coherence is grasped is now located more in the redeemed human consciousness, the heart. This is key in his major work, the Wissbegierde der Weltseite from 3536.
That's the first way of looking at it, right? Seeing the modalities from the supertemporal heart.
That's right. But it faced criticism. People argued it was a bit circular, assuming the very point you need to prove the petitio principii, and others rejected the idea that philosophy couldn't be autonomous.
So how did he respond?
He developed what's sometimes called the second way, the transcendental critique. This was designed to address those criticisms by starting somewhere else.
Where did it start?
With the nature of theoretical thought itself. It's transcendental because it appeals to what he saw as necessary, common structures of thought, and a critique because it aims to show that thought runs into contradictions it can't resolve on its own, revealing its need for deeper foundations. Brummer actually identifies, like, three stages in how this critique developed.
And the core argument is?
That theoretical thought simply cannot be religiously neutral. It always presupposes something deeper. There's a kind of Kantian echo there, thinking about presuppositions, though Duweird also heavily criticized Kant.
What are these presuppositions then?
He identified three key ones: the idea of an origin, the idea of totality, and the idea of coherence between them. These aren't things you arrive at through theory. They make theory possible, and they are inherently religious or pre-theoretical.
Okay, I can see how that might cause ripples. Didn't someone like Van Til react strongly to this?
Oh, yes. Van Til had a sharp reaction. He worried Duweird was maybe drifting towards natural theology, compromising a purely Christian philosophy by starting with seemingly neutral, universally accessible structures of thought.
How did Duweird counter that?
His argument was that all theoretical thought, no matter how secular it appears, is ultimately guided by these pre-theoretical religious commitments, which he famously called ground motives.
Ground motives, like fundamental worldviews.
Exactly. Basic religious beliefs that shape everything else. He identified four major ones driving Western thought. The Christian one, creation, fall, redemption.
Uh-huh.
The Greek, form-matter dualism. The scholastic, race perfecting or superimposed on nature. And the modern humanistic or enlightenment one, nature-freedom dialectic.
Which, you know, isn't miles away from Kuiper's analysis of conflicting worldviews.
Right. And later he added the idea of encapsis.
Yeah, that's a more complex concept about how different individuality structures, like a tree and the soil it's in, interrelate without losing their distinct identities. It fits into that broader structural thinking. So wrapping this up, it's a fascinating arc. From a strong initial focus on God's active providence and plan.
Rooted in Kuiper.
To a later, more structural framework emphasizing a supertemporal reference point, cosmic time, and these underlying religious ground motives that shape all thought. Influenced by Heidegger, the rise of fascism, quite the intellectual journey.
Absolutely. And it's complex stuff. The exact nature of that supertemporal heart and how the transcendental critique functions, these are still points of discussion among scholars. It's not simple.
Definitely not. This deep dive really highlights how profoundly a thinker's context and core beliefs can shape their ideas. It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? How might our own, maybe unexamined, fundamental beliefs be quietly shaping how we understand everything, even subjects that seem purely objective or secular? Something to chew on. Thanks for exploring Duweird's journey with us on the Deep Dive.